Welcome to the Accidental Experts Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Hamilton. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and a child and family therapist. I have been in practice for over 15 years, and I'm also a mom of four. So I know the challenges both professionally and personally. I'm so glad that you're here today to grow your parenting toolbox. Please come as you are and be ready to learn. My goal is to make you the accidental expert so that you can raise healthy humans. Hi guys, we're so glad that you're back. So today we are going to talk to an expert on ADHD. He not only does he have ADHD himself, but he also is a parent of an ADHD kid. So his name is Todd Johnson and he is a licensed marriage and family therapist. And he's going to talk to us about what it is and how to support your kid who has ADHD. Welcome, Todd. We're so excited to have you today. Thanks for being here. Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be talking about ADHD and what it is. And when Todd and I are talking about this, we're going to talk about it just generally because there's so many ways that ADHD can present itself. It can look different. And so not every kid, teen or adult is going to look exactly the same. But we're just going to talk in general about how it presents. So Todd, let's start with what is ADHD? What does that mean?
I mean, there's the complex stuff, the whole neuro, biological kind of developmental aspect of it. And there's a lot of brain stuff that goes on in there. But ultimately, for me, when I think about ADHD, I really think about executive functioning deficits. And so I think in terms of the inability to do tasks and order kind of our emotions and all sorts of stuff in the way that for someone who's neurotypical, they just automatically do that. It's just instinctual. But for somebody who has ADHD, it's a lot harder. It doesn't come naturally. And so they end up being a disorganized mess and sometimes an emotional mess. And that kind of where I kind of go is just thinking in terms of this executive functioning deficit.
Yeah. So ADHD really stands for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So a lot of words to say it's hard to regulate, right? We're in a lot of different places all at the same time. And there's different presentations of ADHD too, can be inattentive, which means hard to focus, right? On whatever's going on, or the like impulsive hyperactive type. So what do you think, when parents are looking at their kid and thinking like, does my kid have ADHD? What does inattentive look like? What are they going to notice?
With the inattentive, for myself, especially because that's definitely where I'm at. I think parents will see a kid who details are hard to work through sometimes. So for some growing up with like in school settings, following the directions or seeing the whole direction. So if you have a sheet of here's these seven steps for this assignment that you got to complete, you're going to miss like half of them. You're going to skip to the end of it, forgetting that step two or step three, because you just don't, you're not paying attention essentially. It's hard to see that list. Or, when a parent is talking to a kid and they're not getting a response back because the kid is mind is elsewhere. So, those are some of the ways it kind of pops up and that I've seen in my own life and in other kids' lives.
Well, and I think even in school, sometimes teachers would say like they're not paying attention. Or I had a kid once who was describing a situation where the class had left and they didn't even notice that the class had left. They were so in their book. And so that can sometimes be a superpower of ADHD is the hyper focus where they're very focused on one thing that really they enjoy, but it's not attentive to all of what's happening around them. Yeah. Right. Okay. And then how about impulsive hyperactive? This is kind of what we typically think of when we think of ADHD is this part, but tell us what are we looking for?
Obviously there's a lot more movement involved in that. And I would say outward behavioral type of stuff that you really start to notice, from the fidgetingness and kind of a kinetic need to keep moving. I mean, in all types, we get a lot of the emotional stuff, but sometimes I feel like the hyper are running, their brains are running so fast that the emotionals kind of gets a little even bigger sometimes for them. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a little more explosive. I think of it more like a sprinter, coming out of the gate really fast at all times, a little bit more so. So there's a speed element involved to it sometimes is how I like to think about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think when I'm also thinking about that impulsive piece, like sometimes parents will say to me, I feel like my kid is bipolar, right? For a minute, they're totally fine. And then all of a sudden, a light switch goes on or off, and then they're totally dysregulated. And then 5 minutes later, they're totally the opposite way again. Like, what is going on? And so that's that emotional regulation piece. So for a second, let's talk about, you mentioned executive functioning. So ADHD is essentially a deficit of executive functioning. Can you name for me what the different areas of executive functioning are that we're looking at?
I'm going to be thinking in terms of, for me, when I think about executive functioning, I turn to people like Thomas Brown, who's done a lot of work on this, and I'm thinking in terms of disorganization of thought, disorganization of tasks, the inability or difficulty of starting a task, which is actually quite hard sometimes. I'm thinking planning, organizing, even time and managing your time well, which is very, very hard. There's a lot of time blindness is what we say with ADHD. And then, the emotional part, which I don't know if we give enough emphasis on or have in the past, and then maybe we are now more, but definitely just then how do we keep those emotions in check when I'm dealing with a situation that I'm responding appropriately?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That emotional regulation piece. Yeah. And then sometimes also the cognitive flexibility, like things changing, right. Mm-hmm. Without a lot of notice, like those kids tend to be the ones that need a lot of warning, right. Mm-hmm. Before
predictability is really good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, consistency, right? Like we're always talking about that for our patients, right? Of like, we want people to like make their schedules predictable so that ADHD kids can really succeed in that. So one thing we haven't mentioned, do you notice there's a difference between how girl ADHD presents and boy ADHD? Or like, can there, obviously there can be crossover, but are there sometimes that ADHD for girls or boys looks different?
Yeah. ADHD across the board always looks different in everybody to me. In fact, I had a conversation once with an assistant principal who was frustrated, and he was like, I have 150 kids with ADHD and none are like this kid. And I wanted to be like, well, you have 150 kids with ADHD. They're all different. Like, yes. And so, typically we'll say boys tend to be more of that active, hyperactive, go, go, go. And girls, it tends to be more internal, people pleasing, trying to control the situation from that. But then again, I know plenty of girls who are more like the boy, and I've seen plenty of boys who are more would be like the traditional girl version of it. But it's definitely different. And in girls, I think we are just really getting better at diagnosing it. I think it's been pretty underdiagnosed for a long time, and now we're kind of recognizing it and seeing it. So
yeah, very good. Okay, so how do you get ADHD? Is this something that's in the water? Because sometimes it seems that way, right? Where it's like families have it, or like an entire school, like that principal saying 150 kids here have it, right? How does ADHD happen?
There's definitely a genetic component. If a brother or a parent has ADHD, I think it's about 70 to 80% chance that next relative level would have it as well. So there's definitely seems to be a genetic component. There's could be some neurobiological stuff, even things like low birth weight sometimes gets talked about, or if the mother was smoking or drinking during pregnancy, that type of stuff. Parenting can kind of help or hurt. I mean, if you're coming in a family system that's pretty chaotic, that's not exactly going to take or help a kid who might have some inclination in a direction, and maybe that instability kind of just little gas amplifies,
in the
fire form, amplifies everything. And so, you know, social stressors can get into it, but there definitely seems to be a genetic component. We see it in scans and brain scans, which I don't understand because I didn't do neurobiology, but I'm told when you start looking at MRIs and fMRIs, you can kind of see these developmental differences between the neurodivergent brain and the neurotypical brain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So how do you get a diagnosis? So we've been talking about, you know, already kind of knowing or looking at symptoms. So how do you officially get a diagnosis for ADHD? What's the process like?
For me, it starts with having a conversation with probably your primary care physician first, maybe a pediatrician, or, you know, if you're an adult, your own internal guy. But then working with counselors or therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, to kind of develop that big picture. You know, we might use some observation of talking about family history, because like I just said, there's this genetic component. So if we know that mom and dad both have it, then that's something we're going to want to factor in. We're going to do some clinical interviews. We're going to be talking about looking at the actual symptoms. How are they playing out? Do we see it? And most importantly, if you know, we go to the DSM, which is what we use for diagnosing stuff. You know, we have to see that it's actually clinically significant, that this is actually causing some level of impairment in the person's life. And it's not just that sometimes they forget or sometimes they lose track of memory, but it's at a level that causes them to miss out on things or causes the problems to occur in their life. And so it has to meet that standard. And so I always take kind of a good team approach when we think about diagnosing, because, you know, as a therapist, I can sit in a class, in a therapy room and see the behaviors probably easier in some regards than maybe the doctor can in a 15, 20 minute appointment. But we also use assessments. Those sometimes can be kind of biased, using the Vanderbilt. You know, a teacher doesn't like a kid, they might score that a little heavier than they should, or they might underreport something. So, I'm a big fan of observing and seeing how it's, playing out.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's that piece of like the diagnosing part that's hard is it has to occur in two settings, right? And when you're a child, the only two settings you really have are school and home. And so that can be difficult. And I do think that the Vanderbilt and the Connors are very subjective in that their report, right? Their parent report, their teacher report. And so sometimes based on those people's experiences, it can kind of skew that. So as therapists, we're like looking to see what do we see and with our trained observations to help diagnose, right, in conjunction with a pediatrician or a psychiatrist to kind of get that whole picture. Because sometimes things look tricky, like anxiety can present oftentimes similarly to ADHD too, right? So that kind of makes it tricky. We got to make sure that we are definitively diagnosing the right thing.
And, you know, like I think in terms of teachers, I've seen Vanderbilts where some teachers score the kid really well and they're doing pretty fine in that class. And then you have another class where the teacher is scoring them horribly and you're kind of, is it ADHD? Is it a classroom environment? Is it, or is it ADHD? Because one part of it is we like to have preferred tasks. So it's a subject we love. So we work really hard in that class.
Yeah.
But when we get to algebra, which we don't like, we don't work as hard. And so you know, all that has to factor in.
Yeah. So it's a whole picture approach. It's not just one setting or 1 minute. And it's also something that's been happening in your lifetime. It's not like something that
just showed up,
right? It's really, even as toddlers, we can see it, but we just don't really have a definitive, there's measures, but they're not as definitive, right? It's really that observational piece. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you know if your child does have ADHD and they're struggling? We talked about the executive functioning. What do you do next? Like, how do you know what the next steps are? So maybe you have gotten an official diagnosis or you're going to work towards that. Like, what are the next parts that we need to be aware of or be thinking about?
I think there's a couple different things depending on how it's playing out and where it's playing out. If we're dealing with some deficits, especially in the academic setting, we're going to be thinking about getting a 504 or an IEP to kind of develop some accommodations that will help the kid work better in school. So, you know, if they're younger, maybe they need more frequent breaks, especially in elementary school where you're with the same teacher for the most part all day in the same room. You're not getting up, you're not moving around. And so breaks and chunking work. And we have all these little lists that you can find out there of accommodations. And so that's definitely a strategy and something that has to happen. As we get older, we might want to focus on things like developing the organizational skills. So we could do that in a counseling environment where we're kind of coaching how to actually process and stay organized and, you know, picking up a planner and how can I use this planner to see what I have coming ahead, because I'm not good with time. I'm not good with thinking about how long my paycheck I get at a pizza place is going to last me before I get paid again, because I'm not looking at time. I don't think that way. So, you know, planners and stuff like that are good. Yeah. Therapy is always great, especially if that emotional component to work through a situation that did not go well. And what can I learn about what I need to do differently? What did I misread? What did I completely miss? Because, you know, I'm distracted. And all that type of stuff.
So, or maybe blown out of proportion, right?
Oh, yeah, out of proportion. It's huge, and it really wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because sometimes you're only listening sometimes, right? Oh, yeah. And then you only caught that one piece, and then you're, like, so upset about that, and you're like, hold on, like, did you hear all the other things that were said? And they're like, no. Yeah,
because there's such there's a component of the ADHD of this negative. We hear the negative really, really, really well, and the negative carries bigger weight and creates rejection and stuff like that. And so when something bad happens, that's the only thing you remember, even if there's like 20 amazing things that didn't happen right before that. And so that's definitely something you have to kind of teach a kid and process through. And, you know, I think an education about ADHD for them is really important, because they got to understand what their limits are and why they think the way they do, or why this is hard, and why this might be easier. Why am I so good at a history class with facts, but not good at math? And I think those are all really important things for them. And I think support is good for them. So when they have friends who have similar type of struggles, I think anytime they can feel like they are not alone is a good thing. And I know even like social media isn't great for kids with ADHD. I encourage them to follow some accounts of people with ADHD just so that they can be reminded, not only get reminders about how ADHD works and how it looks, but to have that, I'm a part of a community. I'm a part of this. I'm not running or dealing with this on my own. And I think that can be positive if it's monitored and we're not on it all night long, like an ADHD kid would want to be, because it's dopamine. So, I think there's a lot of good things, especially building the skills that they're going to need in life is a big part.
Yeah. Well, in learning how to navigate situations not going as planned, right? Like that part is helpful too in therapy. So I thought of something funny when you were saying getting a planner. I once was reading this book that I'll link in the show notes, but it was like in the inventory, it said under organization and planning, it was like, you have 5 different ways to plan or control your time, but you use none of them. And I was like, that is so true, right? Like you're trying, you want that to be easier, but it's just so hard to manage the time. And also like write it down. It's like, oh, I'll get to that, or I'll remember that, but they don't, right? We just don't remember those things. And so we
short-term memory.
Yes. Right. And except for when it's like something really relative to something we really want, and that makes us.
I meet somebody and 5 seconds later, I don't know their name. And so often the recommendation is carrying around a small notebook so that throughout the day, you are literally writing down a bunch of random stuff that you might need to remember later. And then hopefully developing the skill to go back through that and said, oh yeah, I met so-and-so. Oh, I have this assignment coming up. And that's where the planners kind of come in. I use a planner. I don't use my phone for organization because I'll get sidetracked on Facebook or Instagram or some game that I'm playing. And you know, I have to remind myself to then use that planner, get on it every day, multiple times a day. I set alarms to go check my planner to make sure that I'm not forgetting something that needs to get done.
Yeah. Success is in the routine, right? It's
all about routine and ritual.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is so important with kids with ADHD. I mean, just generally, any of us could build on our executive functioning, oh, yeah, whether we have ADHD or not, but especially kids, yes, and teens and adults with ADHD really need the structure. Yep. Okay. So this has been all really helpful information. And I think, you know, a lot of people in the world, and even famous people have ADHD and, yep, they're successful, right?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of people. You can definitely become very successful when we think about ADHD. There is a statistic talking about that 30, almost 40% of people who are entrepreneurs have a diagnosis of ADHD. And because the flip side of ADHD is we have a little bit of a risk-takingness about us, and that allows us to jump into some new opportunities that other people might hesitate on. And so it definitely has its positives, and we see it with celebrities and athletes, you know, the Michael Phelps, the Simone Biles, they talk about it. Richard Branson, who owns, you know, the Virgin Galactic and the whole Virgin Group cruise ships and stuff like that. He's pretty open about his, there's even, and I'm blanking on the guy's name right now, but a Nobel Prize physicist who has talked a lot about his ADHD. And, you know, you're talking about a guy at the top of his game getting worldwide recognition and in a field that's really hard, probably from an executive functioning standpoint, and he is having success there. So it doesn't have to be something that holds you back, and it doesn't have to be something that is negative in the long run if we learn the skills we need and learn to close the gap on these deficits. In many ways, it becomes that superpower. It becomes something that's awesome and helps kids and adults excel.
Yeah. I mean, ADHD is a superpower when you've trained it, right? But every superpower has to be trained, right?
It like we know. Harnessed. You don't just go out and start doing what you're doing without end up hurting a lot of people. It's actually a great parallel, because if you think of every major superhero movie or comic book, that's kind of the storyline. When they get their powers, they start accidentally hurting people because they don't know how to manage it, how to control it. And then over time, they master that.
Yeah. And then they're so successful, right? They're doing their tasks. They're using their superpower. I love it. Okay. So Todd, what do you want parents to take away from this information? What do you want them to leave thinking about, knowing from what you've shared? What do you want them to
focus on? I think that something that's really important as a parent, and I've seen this for myself, is the role of education and just the knowledge of really digging into what ADHD is, because there's no way to really fully talk about that in 15, 20 minutes. It's a deep and big subject. And I think you have to educate yourself as a parent of really getting into what it is, what it isn't, how it plays out, particularly in your child, because you might have multiple children with ADHD and they're going to present very differently. Mm-hmm. And so you can't treat them the same way. So that knowledge component and that education component is one of the most important things that parents can do, because I consistently find parents, if you ask them about ADHD, when they come into the office, they don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like half my job is educating them. And when they learn what they need to learn, it makes working with their kid and connecting with their kid a lot easier.
Oh, so much simpler. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has all been so enlightening. I appreciate your time.
Yes. Glad to be here.
As we're finishing, I think taking away a couple things. One is we have to advocate for our kids. So that means talking to our pediatrician, talking to the school, getting our kid a therapist. Those are all really important ways that we can support our kid with ADHD. As we're concluding, I want you to know that Todd is going to come back and talk about how to parent a kid with ADHD, and that is going to be an amazing episode. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and rate us. We love all of the emails that we're getting. So if you want to send an email to request a topic or tell us what you think about our show, our email is accidentalexperts@gmail.com. Remember to like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And we are now on YouTube, so you can watch us live. Talk to you next week. Some words from our legal team.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended or implied to be a substitute for appropriate professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained on or available through this podcast, is for general information purposes only. This podcast makes no representations and assumes no responsibility for the accuracy or information on or available through this podcast, and such information is subject to change without notice. You are encouraged to confirm any information obtained through this program with other sources and review all information regarding any condition or treatment with the appropriate professionals.
What we're saying is, yes, I am a real therapist, but I'm not your therapist.